This is The Record. I'm Steve Scherer. The new police chief will want to help the city respond effectively to crime. But what can be done to prevent crime? One argument for raising the minimum wage is that better pay will tie a person to the work in a positive way. It will give them hope that they can get ahead, and their kids will pick up on that hope, be less likely to commit crimes. Robert Crutchfield grew up in a part of Pennsylvania where he says people who are willing to work hard could find jobs that let them provide for their families and build a life. Crutchfield is a professor of sociology at the University of Washington. He's worked as a parole agent, a juvenile probation officer. His research focuses on the connections between labor markets, economic opportunity, and crime. Basically, a good job reduces crime.
The evidence is increasingly showing is when you get an individual who has that kind of good, solid, I can build a life on job, you have something to lose. And it sort of channels your lifestyle in very non-criminogenic ways so that, you know, you can't hang out with your buddies if you're an 18-year-old and you have a job that you want to keep because you're invested in that job. And those are important. In this city, it's still Boeing. It's working on the docks. It's working for the ferry system. Those kind of jobs are worth keeping, and they structure your lifestyle. They structure your patterns of life in very important ways. And that structuring makes it less likely that you're going to engage in crime. And I'm not really saying sort of rationally making a choice, but rather you don't spend the time in the places with the people that are more likely to get you involved in crime. Contrast that with those other kinds of jobs, those low-end service sector jobs, frequently fast food places, those kind of service industries jobs. They don't hold that same kind of hold on a person. They are more likely to, if you lose that job because you show up hungover or not at all after a night out with your buddies, if you lose it, what's the big deal? It's not like losing a job, an entry-level job at a Boeing or a steel mill or something like that, which means you're liberated to have a lifestyle that can be hanging out. And when young men are in that situation, things happen.
That's a fascinating thing to think about in terms of this argument about raising the minimum wage that we're having in this city. Yeah. The job, if it's a $15 an hour job, even if it's a job that may not garner the respect in the culture, does the job itself have a higher stature and then perhaps change people's behaviors?
That's going to be an interesting research question. I would think that anything that improves the quality of the job for people who occupy it, and makes it more valuable to them, will make neighborhoods more stable, will make families more stable, will make crime more likely. Less likely. So that I would say that, you know, it's, you know, a higher salary does it or benefits do it. I think that this debate between, you know, do they count benefits or do they not? I think it's an interesting one. As a researcher, it's going to ask, you know, raise some interesting questions, because I think that in general, we need to think of how do we improve the quality of work. And again, it's about whether people value the work enough to invest in it, changing their lifestyle.
You've talked about it also in the book. You talk about it being you can't separate out this person is a gang member, or this person has a poor home life, or this person lives in an economically distressed area, because all that has to be intertwined with what you've called hope. Can you quantify? Can you study hope?
Well, it depends on how you study it. If you count things like I have and do things, it's a little hard. But there are other people who have done really interesting field work where they go into the field, they get to know people, and they talk to people. And the kind of things one suspects from the quantitative analyses, the stuff that I've done and others have done, they see it in the conversations with people. They see it on the street when they talk to young people. They see it when they interview kids in schools and on the street corners. Kids need something to look for. One of the real fascinating things we've seen is that when a lot of people want to talk about get kids jobs, is that what'll help delinquency? And I don't think so. And increasingly, I think the evidence doesn't say so. So one of the things that happens is with you have kids working. Kids who are doing well in school, when they work, they do fine, and they may even do better in school because they're more focused. Kids who aren't doing well in school, they may pull them away a little bit, and that's a bad thing. School's a better preventer of delinquency than employment. But what matters is kids do less well in school when their parents aren't doing well. And so we miss the boat, I think, when we say, let's get kids jobs and that gives them hope. No, what gives them hope is having them adults, parents, people in their neighborhood around them, having a life that they can look for and say, yeah, I want to be like that. I want a life like that.
Robert Crutchfield is a professor of sociology at the UW. He's author of Get a Job, Labor Markets, Economic Opportunity, and Crime. During the 60s, you write that the economy was growing, and yet crime was growing.
Yeah.
Most people point to that and they say, oh, that's because of the rise of the baby boom generation. What do you think was going on?
I think that's part of it. I mean, certainly one of the things, you know, criminologists have known for a long time is that the very crime prone years are actually 14, 15, 16. So with more people in those age ranges, you're going to have more crime. And boomers, us boomers, we kind of overwhelmed a lot of systems. We overwhelmed neighborhoods, communities, churches, families, local institutions, and those are all the things that are supposed to restrict us and control us. And so I think that there was that, and we were just in the crime-prone years. The thing about the 60s is that the boom of the 60s didn't land equally on everybody. That one of the things that was going on, and I found an interesting quote from Martin Luther King where he talked about the reality was that there were pockets that were not benefiting from that, and inner city areas were some of those areas, particularly inner city African American neighborhoods. There, while the country's employment rate, the cities and states' unemployment rates were all, you know, looking really well, in some of those pockets, unemployment rates were like 25%. That's great depression kind of rates. And so while we had boom time during that period, what we didn't look at and what we don't have data on is the extent to which that boom left out people, and that was directly related to crime.
So you've written about the Great Migration. People came from the South. Mm-hmm. They came to the North thinking they were going to get good jobs, and for a while they did get better jobs. What did the 60s just change because those jobs – had saturated those areas?
Not so much that, I don't think, because I think those jobs were still there then for them. But what the difference, I think, was, you know, a lot of immigrant groups tend to come, and contrary to what some people would have us believe, immigrants tend to have very low crime rates. And they come and they work really hard. They're some of the hardest working people in the population. And I think if you think about the Great Migration, the movement of African Americans out of the South, rural South in particular, to our urban areas in the North and West, that was like an immigration stream. And they were from within the U.S., but they were coming from a very different place to cities of the North and industrial West. And I think the parents and the people who moved out of the South, life was so much better for them. I mean, working one's hardest at a steel mill or an auto plant or a slaughterhouse in Chicago was so much better than being a tenant farmer in Alabama or Mississippi, that it was a good thing. But like other immigration streams before them, their children weren't as excited about those things. And so one of the things I argue, speculate, wonder about in the book is the extent to which young people looked at this better life in the promised land and didn't see it as positive as their parents. And I think that's probably the same for a lot of immigrant streams. So those jobs were still there. But that super good life that people came to expect probably wasn't there. And that goes back to that much higher unemployment rates in some of those communities. So a lot of the young people I went to high school with expected to get jobs in the mills, and some of them did. But then when things started to fluctuate in the 70s, they were the ones that were laid off because, you know, the last hired, first fired.
Were they the ones to commit crimes?
Some of them certainly did. Yeah, some. My guess is that their children are probably the people that we're calling thugs today, and not because they failed as parents or because they didn't work hard or they didn't try hard, but their children look up and they see less opportunity, less things going for them. And so that's what I wonder about. It is the case that it was a high crime area then. When touring Western State Penitentiary as a parole officer, bumped into people I went to high school with, which is a little scary and difficult. But I think that the gang problems and high crime problems that we saw, you know, more recently than that, I think is probably their children more so than those out-of-work steel workers.
That's Robert Crutchfield. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Washington. He's written Get a Job, Labor Markets, Economic Opportunity, and Crime. With Ross Reynolds, I'm Steve Scherr. You're tuned to The Record from KUOW.